We're continuing Chapter 6 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix.
And Jesse's going to let me do extractions on him tomorrow. And
we'll see if we'll do extractions. So they just woken up, remember? They got down for breakfast. Half an hour later, Harry and Ron, who had dressed and breakfasted quickly, entered the drawing room, a long, high-ceilinged room on the first floor, with olive green walls covered in dirty tapestries. The carpet exhaled little clouds of dust every time someone put their foot on it.
Ew.
And the long, moss-green velvet curtains were buzzing as though swarming with invisible bees. It was around these that Mrs. Weasley, Hermione, Ginny, Fred, and George were grouped, all looking rather peculiar, as they had tied cloths over their noses and mouths. Each of them was also holding a large bottle of black liquid with a nozzle at the end. "Cover your face and take a spray," said Mrs. Weasley to Harry and Ron the moment she saw them.
You'd think that they'd have a better thing to protect themselves other than a cloth over their nose and mouth.
She's trying to make it, like, relatable to children who have sprayed things and their moms would put cloth on their face.
Okay.
It's very, like, I mean, it's dumb, right? Clearly they wouldn't have something to spray on them.
Maybe they would.
I guess.
Like, they use potions.
Yeah.
They would have something to spray on
them. Anyway, so, she said to Harry and Ron, pointing to two more bottles of black liquid standing on the spindle-leg table. Oh, I didn't do her voice. Okay. "It's Doxide. Doxycide. I've never seen an infestation this bad. What the house elf's been doing for the last 10 years? Hermione's face was half concealed by a tea towel, but Harry distinctly saw her throw a reproachful look at Mrs. Weasley at those words. "Creature's really old. He probably couldn't manage." "You'd be surprised what Creature can manage when he wants to, Hermione," said Sirius, who had just entered the room carrying a blood-stained bag of what appeared to be dead rats. "I have just been feeding Buckbeak," he added, in reply to Harry's inquiring look. "I keep him upstairs in my mother's bedroom. Anyway, this writing desk." He dropped the rats on an armchair, and then bent over to examine the locked cabinet, which, Harry noticed for the first time, was shaking slightly. "Well, Molly, I'm pretty sure this is a boggart," said Sirius, peering through the keyhole. "But perhaps we ought to let Mad-Eye have a shifty at it before we let it out. Knowing my mother, it could be something much worse." "Right you are, Sirius," said Mrs. Weasley. They were both speaking carefully in polite tones that told Harry quite plainly that neither had forgotten their disagreement of the night before. A loud clanging bell sounded from downstairs, followed at once by a cacophony of sounds and wails that had been triggered the previous night by Tonks knocking over the umbrella stand. "I keep telling them not to ring the doorbell," Sirius said exasperatedly, hurrying back out of the room. They heard him thundering downstairs as Mrs. Black's screeches echoed up through the house once more. "Stain of dishonor, filthy half-breeds, blood traitors, children of filth." "Close the door, please, Harry," said Mrs. Weasley. Harry took as much time as he dared to close the drawing room door. He wanted to listen to what was going on downstairs. Sirius had obviously managed to shut the curtains over his mother's portrait because she had stopped screaming. He heard Sirius walking down the hall, then the clattering of the chain on the front door, and then a deep voice as he recognized Kingsley Shacklebolt, saying, "Hester's just relieved me, so she's got Moody's cloak now. Thought I'd leave a report for Dumbledore." Feeling Mrs. Weasley's eyes in the back of his head, Harry regretfully closed the drawing room door and rejoined the Doxy party. Mrs. Weasley was bending over to check the page on Doxies in Gilderoy Lockhart's Guide to Household Pests, which was lying open on the sofa. Right, you ought. Need to be careful, because Doxies bite and their teeth are poisonous. I've got a bottle of antidote here, but I'd rather nobody needed it." She straightened up, positioning herself squarely in front of the curtains, and beckoned them all forward. When I say the word, start spraying immediately," she said. "They'll come flying at us, I expect, but it says on the sprays, one good squirt will paralyze them. When they're immobilized, just throw them in this bucket." She stepped carefully out of the line of fire and raised her own spray. All right, squirt! Harry had been spraying only a few seconds when a fully grown doxy came soaring out of a fold in the material. Shiny, beetle-like wings whirred, tiny needle-sharp teeth bared, its fairy-like body covered with thick black hair, and its four tiny fists clenched with fury. Harry caught it in the face with a blast of doxycide, froze it in midair, and fell, with a surprisingly loud thunk, onto the worn carpet below. Harry picked it up and threw it in the bucket. "Fred, what are you doing?" said Mrs. Weasley sharply. "Spray that one at once and throw it away." Harry looked around. Fred was holding a struggling doxy between his forefinger and thumb. "Righto," said Fred brightly, spraying the doxy quickly in the face so that it fainted. But the moment Mrs. Weasley's back was turned, he pocketed it with a wink. "We want to experiment with doxy venom for our skiving snack boxes," George told Harry under his breath. Deftly spraying two doxies at once as they soared straight for his nose, Harry moved closer to George and muttered out of the corner of his mouth, "What are skiving snack boxes?" "Range of sweets to make you ill," George whispered, keeping a wary eye on Mrs. Weasley's back. "Not seriously ill, mind. Just ill enough to get you out of class when you feel like it. Fred and I have been developing them this summer. They're double-ended, color-coated chews. If you eat the orange half of the puking pastilles, you throw up. The moment you've been rushed out of the lesson for the hospital wing, you swallow the purple half, which restores you to full fitness, enabling you to pursue leisure activities of your own choice during an hour that would otherwise have been devoted to unprofitable boredom. That's what we've been putting in the adverts, anyway," whispered Fred, who had edged out of Mrs. Weasley's line of vision, and was now sweeping a few stray doxies from the floor and adding them to his pocket. "But they still need a bit of work. At the moment, our testers are having a bit of trouble stopping puking long enough to swallow the purple end."
"Testers?"
"Us," said Fred. "We take it in turns. George did the fainting fancies. We both tried the nosebleed nougat."
"Mom thought we'd been dueling," said George.
"Joke shop still on, then?" Harry muttered, pretending to be adjusting the nozzle on the spray.
"Well, we haven't got a chance to get the premises yet," said Fred, dropping his voice even lower as Mrs. Weasley mopped her brow with her scarf before returning to the attack.
"So we're running it in a mail-order service at the moment. We're putting advertisements in the Daily Prophet last week."
"All thanks to you, mate," said George. "But don't worry, Mama hasn't got a clue. She won't read the Daily Prophet anymore because of telling lies about you and Dumbledore."
Harry grinned. He had forced the Weasley twins to take the 1,000 galleon prize money he had won in the Triwizard Tournament to help them realize their ambition to open the joke shop. But he was still glad to know that his part in furthering their plans was unknown to Mrs. Weasley, who did not think that running a joke shop was a suitable career for two of her sons. The de-doxying of the curtains took most of the morning. It was past midday when Mrs. Weasley finally removed her protective scarf, sank into a sagging armchair, and sprang up again with a cry of disgust, having sat on the bag of dead rats. The curtains were no longer buzzing. They hung limp and damp from the intensive spraying. Unconscious doxies lay crammed in the bucket at the foot of them, beside a bowl of black eggs, at which Crookshanks was now sniffing, and Fred and George were shooting covetous looks.
"I think we'll tackle those after lunch."
Oh, that's Mrs. Weasley.
"I think we'll tackle those after lunch."
Mrs. Weasley pointed at the dusty glass-fronted cabinets standing on either side of the mantelpiece. They were crammed with an odd assortment of objects, a selection of rusty daggers, claws, a coiled snakeskin, a number of tarnished silver boxes inscribed with languages Harry could not understand, and, least pleasant of all, an ornate crystal bottle with a large opal set in the stopper, full of what Harry was quite sure was blood. The clanging doorbell rang again. Everyone looked at Mrs. Weasley.
"Stay here,"
she said firmly, snatching up the bag of rats, as Mrs. Black's screeches started up again from down below.
"I'll bring up some sandwiches."
She left the room, closing the door carefully behind her. At once, everyone dashed over to the window to look down onto the doorstep. They could see the top of an unkempt gingery head and a stack of precariously balanced cauldrons.
"Mundungus," said Hermione. "What's he brought all those cauldrons for?" Probably looking for a safe place to keep them, said Harry. Isn't that what he was doing the night he was supposed to be tailing me, picking up dodgy cauldrons? Yeah, you're right, said Fred, as the front door opened. Mundungus heaved his cauldrons through it and disappeared from view. Blimey, Mom won't like that. He and George crossed to the door and stood behind it, beside it, listening intently. Mrs. Black's screaming had stopped again. Mundungus is talking to Fred, Sirius and Kingsley, Fred muttered, frowning with concentration. Can't hear him properly. Do you reckon we can risk the extendable years? Might be worth it, said George. I could sneak upstairs and get a pair. But at that precise moment, there was an explosion of sound from downstairs that rendered the extendable ears quite unnecessary. All of them could hear exactly what Mrs. Weasley was shouting at the top of her lungs. We are not running a hideout for stolen goods! I love hearing Mum shout at someone else, said Fred with a satisfied smile on his face, as he opened the door an inch or so to allow Mrs. Weasley's voice to permeate the room better. Make such a nice change. Completely irresponsible, as if we haven't got enough to worry about without dragging stolen cauldrons into the house. The idiots are letting her get into her stride, said George, shaking her head. You've got to head her off early, otherwise she builds up a head of steam and goes on for hours. She's been dying to have a go at Mundungus ever since he sneaked off when he was supposed to be following you, Harry. And there goes Sirius's mum again. Mrs. Weasley's voice was lost amid fresh shrieks and screams from the portraits in the hall. George made to shut the door to drown the noise out. Before he could do so, a house elf edged into the room. Maybe we should stop there. Alright, we'll stop there where this new house elf comes into the room, and we'll see what they do with him. I hope you like that kitten. It is bedtime now. Because you're an adorable kitten. I love you so much. Mm-hmm. Sleep well, beautiful girl.